Welcome to episode 122 of the Martin Mainley Photography Podcast. Today I'm going to do another single exposures type episode to catch up on some recent shots that don't form a large enough group individually to fill a podcast. Before we move on to the main topic though, I'd like to read you a message from our current sponsors, DxO Labs. DxO Optics Pro sets the standard for automatic correction of your images. Based on extensive analysis of cameras and lenses, this award-winning software enables photographers to improve hundreds of images very quickly, saving time and providing spectacular results. Version 5 of DxO Optics Pro runs on Mac and Windows. Version 5, which has only just been released, incorporates a new generation RAW converter, providing more details and less artifacts for a new level of image quality. So let's jump right into this now with a shot from a visit to the Nature Research Center not far from my home here in Tokyo, which is image number 1651. I often take a wander over to the center on an afternoon when I'm feeling sort of the need to indulge in photography, but have been too caught up in other stuff to get out for a full day. This was one of those days, and I'd walked down to the pond in the not really a valley, but the dip in the park, and the sun was just sort of poking over the trees enough to illuminate the pampas grass, but the trees themselves were now in full shade for the most part, which gave some great contrast to work with. In many scenes, too much contrast can be a pain, but often it can make a shot too, like I think it's really done here. I've used the 70-200mm f2.8 lens at 153mm, thanks to the EXIF data. You can see that I focused on the head of the grass to the right of the frame, and I've used an aperture of f4 to get just enough depth of field to bring some of the more distant heads into enough focus to create little balls of light, but not really overtake the shot. I've mentioned before that working with bokeh, or the out-of-focus areas in the frame, is really just important, if not more important than the focus part. Obviously, what you focus on is very important, but don't forget about your bokeh, because it can really help to add a lot to a shot. And this is probably another good example to back that up. You will see that I've placed some of the nearer grasses in the left of the frame too, forming what I like to call foreground bokeh. The f4 aperture does give us enough focus along the focal plane there, though, to be able to delve in and look at some of the details in the grasses in the main, on the same level as the main subject. The shutter speed was 1/1600th of a second, actually at ISO 200. I didn't really think about this shot when I spoke about the highlight priority feature on the 1DS a few weeks ago, but I'd also used it here. I must say that I didn't notice such degradation in the dark areas of the shot here as with the image of the flowing water with the snow-covered rocks that we looked at a few weeks ago. I'd say it's going to take some getting used to, but I like the results here, and the highlight priority will without doubt have helped to get the to capture the highlights in the grasses here. Anyway, around an hour later, I shot image number 1652, again in the research center, and still shooting pampas grass. This time the sun was shining through a gap in the trees as it got lower in the sky. Still shooting with the 70-200mm and highlight priority turned on, so the ISO is set to 200 again. This time, much less contrast, but I was really just sort of playing with the contrast between the in focus rather than in light, between the foreground pampas grass and the two heads that we see to the right there, and all of those nice big blobs of sunlight that are coming through the trees. I basically shot this, to emphasize those things, what with the lens wide open at f2.8. And at this distance, you know, even the two heads of pampas grass to the left are not fully in focus. And really, you know, the darker seeds are being sort of picked out there inside the depth of field and given more sharpness than the foreground and background areas of the same heads of grass. Those two heads of grass to the right there are much more out of focus, looking almost like a bit of sort of paisley pattern. All of this, being lit from behind by those big balls of sun peeking through the gaps in the trees, really just for me works. It's not one of my favourite shots, but it's something that I'm quite happy with. Note that I was working in manual mode as I often tend to, but if I'd been using aperture mode, I'd have had to use probably around one stop of exposure compensation. Plus, that is, of course, to stop the pampas from falling into silhouette. As it is, you know, probably, I think, helped by the highlight priority, even the balls of light are not really blown out in this shot, and the grass itself is still lit relatively well, so I'm happy enough with the end results. Let's move on now to a shot from the following day on the 27th of December 2007, which is image number 1654. This was actually the same group of swans that we looked at in image 1655, which I selected as one of my best shots from 2007, 3 weeks ago, in episode 119. Actually shot just 9 seconds before that image. You can see here that the swans are not yet evenly spaced and not looking half as majestic. Still, I like this image for different reasons. Firstly, again, I like the contrast. Although the sun was up by this time, when metering for the swans in the shadows, the rest of the shot really goes quite dark. You'll remember from that other image, the sun was just starting to poke over the top of the trees in the hills behind this pond. And it wasn't shining directly on this part of the scene. Then there's the reflection of the swans in the dark water. What I like most, though, although it would be nothing without the swans and their reflections, are the 14 or so cormorants that are sitting in the water, looking up at the swans as they fly overhead, almost like regarding them. I've mentioned this before, but quite some time ago, that I enjoy images that make you work a little. Not all of them, but sometimes if you peer into a shot a little bit more deeply, you see something that is not immediately obvious, and I usually get a kick out of that. In the web-sized image, it will be difficult, you can see them, but it'll be more difficult to see this much detail. But in the full-sized image, it's quite a treat. I have this one flagged for a 13x19 print the next time I have a bit of a printing session, and I can't wait to sort of see this printed out and peer into those details off screen. This was shot with the 300mm f2.8 with aperture f4.5 for 1/640th of a second at ISO 200. Another shot that appeals to me from the same day, about an hour or so later, I think, from the last shot, is image number 1656. This is a bit of an understated image of three ducks, again with a lot of contrast between the dark water and the highlights. This time, the highlights are actually catching the ripples made by the ducks as they paddle their way across the surface of the pond. You know, the sun's high enough in the sky now to actually be hitting the surface. But still, there's a lot of contrast. You can see that I've cropped the hell out of the top and the bottom of this image to really concentrate our eyes on the ducks and their wake. The duck to the left of the image, as we look at it, is kind of leading us out of the frame. But I find myself working my way back into the image from the left to right, to the point where I find the third duck that has seemingly just sort of come into the frame as though it was, even choreographed in to a certain extent. This was shot with the 600mm f4, so you can imagine I was pretty far away. I tend to spend a fair amount of time when I'm just sort of standing at the side of these ponds and things, just looking around for things that might make shots, often peering through the lens and framing things up. And, you know, I find that, you know, they don't all work. You know, I'll snap the odd one off, and I find that they don't all work at all. But being aware of what compositions I like and trying to shoot for them increases the ratio of images that make the final cut. Of course, there are similar images. I'm just really killing time between sort of the, you know, maybe a group of swans taking off as they did earlier. But you know, they don't all make it to my website either. But if I, you know, if I was to upload every single image that I thought made the grade, then, you know, there'd be far too much of the same sort of image. This is actually a problem that I sometimes see with people's online galleries. You know, mine's not perfect, and I've definitely got some pruning to do, especially when it comes to my older images that are, you know, really not up to my current standards. But I find that some people just upload far too many of the same subject. I can sometimes not resist uploading more than one variation of the same subject, but I always make sure each image has merit by itself and not too similar to others uploaded. And this can be heartbreaking because, you know, a lot of the time they're all good in their own way. But if you don't edit what you upload, then I think it's really slighting the people that come to your website because, well, put it this way, you know, if I can't be bothered to edit what I'm uploading, how can I expect people to sort of go through and look at them? You know, people don't have a lot of time. So, you know, I would rather do the editing at my end and only present the shots that I think are the best from the shoot. You know, sometimes I see galleries that contain 30, 40 shots, basically, essentially of the same image, not even a variation. You know, it's like, you know, literally someone's just gone on burst mode and shot off a whole batch of images and then just processed them and slapped them all up on Flickr or somewhere. But, you know, that to me is kind of abusing the position that you have. If you want to get people to look at your shots and you find that you're the sort of person that actually does that, you might want to think about editing them before you upload them all. This usually, for me at least, puts me off looking at them, to be honest. If the photographer, you know, goes to the trouble to just filter through and only show me the best work that they've shot of that particular scene or that day, then I'm much more likely to sort of look through them all. Anyway, before I rant on too much about that, if I haven't already, this was shot again at 1/640th of a second with an aperture of f/5.6 this time, now at ISO 100. The sun, like I say, was well over the trees now and hitting the ducks directly. So, you know, I was able to get a slightly smaller aperture and another stop in ISO. The next shot I grabbed on the 2nd of January. Every year on the 2nd and 3rd of January, there's a falconry display twice each day for both days. So four displays, four shows, if you like. And a number of other events that occur at the Hamadikyu Gardens here in Tokyo. As I have now resigned myself to actually being a bit of a bird freak, I like to get over there for the falconry, just to get a close look at these majestic birds, you know, really close up. I'll get into a shot from that display in a moment. Before I do, I wanted to look at another shot that was from another event where a guy in a lion suit, almost like a dragon, it's the traditional dance that they do here in Japan called Shishimai, which is translated directly as the lion dance. As you can imagine, there are people forming a solid circle around the area where the dance is performed. And to be honest, the dance itself, however spectacular, is to me not that photogenic, especially with the people all around. The costume, though, is pretty cool, and you know, I was hoping to get a shot, and I was trying to sort of get a clear shot through the crowd, but couldn't really, you know, close up this is, but couldn't really sort of get in there, and at least not to get anything worth sharing. After the dance is over, though, people put money into the lion's mouth to pay for the dance, and I grabbed the image that we're currently looking at, which is 1671 at that point. It's a little bit busy, you know, there's people's faces sort of coming into the frame at the back, but I was actually on tiptoes here and sort of shooting down into the scene through a gap between people. And it was, you know, it was a bit of a, like I say, a grab shot, but, you know, I thought I'd share it with you anyway to give you a glimpse into the Japanese culture. You can see the hands of an adult placed firmly on the little girl's shoulders. What's actually happening here is something common that you see here in Japan, and that's the adult is sort of forcing the girl forward to bow at the lion in gratitude. The little girl, though, is there. We can see her sort of peering into the mouth of the lion, where she will undoubtedly have eye contact with the guy inside the costume. You know, he actually put his hands out of from the inside of the lion into the mouth to take the money from people. So, you know, there's no sort of pretense that it's a real lion or everything. But, you know, I just thought it was quite nice the way you can see that potential eye contact there. This is one of just a few of the shots that I managed to snap through the gaps in, you know, the other people around. And, you know, everyone was enjoying the scene, and, you know, it was a nice warm winter's day. And, you know, many of the people were photographing the spectacle as well. This was shot, by the way, at f4 with a shutter speed of 1,200th of a second with ISO 100. Let's take a look at another glimpse into the Japanese culture with image number 1672. Here we can see how the Japanese have taken the art of falconry and fused it with their own culture. The flat hat there is very much the sort of hat that many people in England and in many other countries, I imagine, have worn for a long time. All of the falconers, even the women, wear these hats, though, and, you know, the rest of the outfit, though, is very much Japanese, right down to those toed shoes that he has on there. This basically gives us an idea, of how they fuse the two cultures together. And also from this image, you know, it gives us an idea of the type of event. You can see the blurred heads of the crowd watching the falconers walking their birds around the field. This venue is actually not great for shooting, as they have a large bright blue net over the field to the right of this scene here, but, you know, if you were to stand watching from the best point, the best position to view the whole thing, then there's this big blue band. It's really shocking bright blue, running right the way across the back of the scene. It's basically a net to keep the birds off the seeds, and, you know, I enjoy going there to photograph the flowers that will grow from those seeds as well. So it's one of those vicious circles, a catch-22 sort of thing. But, you know, it's just not that photogenic. I shot this with my 70-200mm lens again at f4 for 1/320th of a second with ISO 100. Next, in image number 1674, we can see one shot where I actually managed to sit down and shoot through a gap in the people in front of me with my 300mm lens. Because I could sit down, the blue netting in the background is out of the frame, allowing me to get a nice portrait of both the falconer and his bird. And they were looking right back at me. I get the distinct feeling that he's looking, wondering whether I'm actually shooting him or not. This is part of the show, though, after they've done all of their stuff and ask you to actually come by and, you know, get your photo. So there's no worry about me shooting this portrait. The background is a little bright, as the main, the main subject, the man and his falcon, were in shadow. But that doesn't worry me too much. It's nice to see the falcon, that little falcon sort of decoration thing that the guy has there on, probably what looks like a bootlace tie. And the whistle and other paraphernalia associated with falconry, again, sort of intermingled with the Japanese traditional dress. Like I say, I shot this with the 300mm and it was wide open at f2.8 for maximum bokeh in the background there, minimum depth of field. And the shutter speed with that was 1/160th of a second at ISO 100. Let's finish with a bit of street photography. Not one of my fortes, but like us all, I turn my hand to just about anything if I see a shot. The image is number 1678. I'd been to the Canon Service Center in Ginza, here in Tokyo, and I got there only to find that they were still on their New Year's holidays, despite it being the 5th of January. I was actually still on my holidays too, like most people this year, as the official holidays went up to the 3rd, and the 4th being a Friday, most people took the day off for a long holiday. And I have no problem with that, but I feel another rant coming on here. Canon, basically I went to their website and it said that they were closed for New Year's, year end and New Year's. And basically that was it. And this is out of that range. You know, everyone, who says that is generally back at work right now. So I was a little bit disappointed. I was over there to get some dust removed from my 1DS Mark III's sensor. You're probably going to be wondering why I've got dust on it after just 2 weeks, 2 months, and it's got the dust removal and everything. Basically, I'd messed up. I'd tried to clean the inside of the. I tried to blow the dust off the sensor. And for some reason, something came out of the blower that I was using and kind of splattered onto the sensor there. Long story, but basically, I'd made a bit of a mess, so I had to go and get it cleaned, but they weren't open. So, fair enough. Nice long holiday. All I would have liked to have seen was a note on a website saying that it was going to be closed longer than the standard holidays. I think that I tend to find that Canon are really sort of starting to rest on their laurels a lot these days. As much as I love the company and the gear, I just find that they're becoming way too, I think maybe arrogant's a good word. They're leaving out important functionality on expensive cameras, like, not having the automatic mirror lockup when you plug in a cable release and things like this, and they're just generally starting to fall behind a bit. And I think that you're just getting too, big headed or whatever you want to call it, arrogant. It's so, start to think, that the people that are, nobody from Canon's listening, and if they are, I'd be happy. But I'd really like to see you start to think a little bit more about the people that are putting the money in your pockets. Because, without all of the people like us buying your gear, you wouldn't really have a business. So, start to just think of us a little bit more. Give us a few more of those features that everybody's screaming out for and post a two-sentence notice about extended holidays on your website when you're going to take time off, guys. Anyway, rant number two out of the way. I was crossing the main street in Ginza after visiting the service center. And they close it off for cars on the weekend, and the sun was sort of pouring into the street like this, and the Japanese flags were all out along the streets. Again, a little bit of culture here. You often find as well that in Japan on holidays, national holidays, the buses all have the Japanese flag on the front, both sides of the front at the top there, which is something that you don't see, at least not in England. I don't know about other countries. Anyway, I saw the photograph, the light was pouring into the street. I shot a number of images here and selected this one to post, for basically just another, peek into Japanese daily life. I actually had framed this one, with one more flag visible on the left-hand side, but I found that it added too much sort of dead space to the left of the frame and the shot lost its balance. I had framed the other images differently, but I liked the content of this one more, with the guy sort of walking the dog, the cyclist, and the person with the mask there just in the bottom right third there. and I decided to crop this one to almost a square and go with this. I'd selected f16 for a lot of depth of field and set the exposure with a shutter speed of 1/125th of a second, taking care to I wanted to see the brightness and really of the sun really pouring into the scene, but also needed to stop the details of the people in the foreground being lost in the shadows. I had used the 24 to 105mm f4 lens on the camera, as I often just sling that on when I'm going to throw it over my shoulder for a trip into town. So that's it for today. We're caught up on single exposures again, probably for a few months. Catching up always feels good, but to be honest, part of the reason for falling back on these images today is because I've been spending a lot of time on other stuff, like preparing for the workshop, which is just another week away, and looking into upgrading the software for the forum, which I mentioned I would probably do over the Christmas holidays, though it's obviously not been done. As a quick update, I've been trying to find a way. It's really a very patchwork solution at the moment, to bridge the Coppermine gallery software that I use for my own gallery and the members' gallery to the PHP BB version 3 software, which is what the forum runs on. And, you know, it's really the forum, the PHP BB people don't really get into that. The Coppermine people have until now always produced a what they call a bridge file, which basically helps you to just bridge them, you know, join the two together. But they don't seem to want to do that this time. They're relying on the community, and you know the solutions so far have been very patchy. I put them all together and tried to figure out, get the latest file and stuff like that. Some don't work, some do, and it's really just a bit of a mess at the moment. I did find, though, that there's one guy that's put together a really good solution, but it means changing a few things that you wouldn't normally change to make this happen. So I'm currently wondering whether it's worth doing that or waiting for just a single file. Anyway, either way, I will try to get that done after the workshop. But for now, you know, we need to just stick with the old forum software, which is still working fine. So no problems there, I hope. Also, I just wanted to quickly say that, you know, the long exposures assignment has now been closed. I've just locked the gallery and started the voting system. We'll be voting for 2 weeks from today until the end of February the 3rd. So please do come along and select which images you want to vote for from all of the great entries that have been submitted. Thanks to all of those that took part, and as usual, I'm really looking forward to see who wins. Great shots from everybody. On the 4th or 5th of February, we'll find out who the winner is of the assignment, and also at that point we'll know who the winner of the accumulated votes for the prize for the last 5 assignments is going to be, and that winner will receive a copy of DxO Optics Pro and the film pack from DxO Labs. Of course, the long exposures winner will also get a fine art print of their choice from my online gallery at martinbaileyphotography.com. And that's really it for today, so thanks very much for listening, and I'll speak with you again next week. So you have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.